We're holding on to some Achbeis Amud Beis about the middle of the middle size lines, and by the two dots, the line begins Rachmi. We started, the Gemara had started yesterday telling a couple of stories about when Chachamim made Shidduchim for themselves, for their children, and what happens afterwards. In particular, we talked about that they used to often make it, they used to often arrange that the chassan would go away for many years to learn in yeshiva before he would actually come home and marry his wife. So yesterday we had a story involving that with Rebbe's son, where he was supposed to go away for 12 years, and then in the end he decided to marry her first and then go away. So now another story in this connection. Rav Chananya ben Chachinai, have a ka'ozel lebei rab, Rav Chananya ben Chachinai, the Tana, we have mentioned in Pirkei Avos, and here and there in Shas, he was going to the yeshiva, the Shilhei Hilulei did Rav Shimon ben Yochai. At the very end of the wedding of the Sheva Brachas of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. So it was the fifth or sixth or whatever it is day of Sheva Brachas, and Rav Chananya ben Chachinai was getting ready to leave. Omalei, so Rav Shimon, who was still in the middle of his Sheva Brachas, says, "He actively had to osi b'handoch. Wait for me. Let me come with you." But Rav Chananya ben Chachinai did not want to go. He wanted to go to the yeshiva. He didn't want to stay. Rather, he wanted to go to the yeshiva as soon as possible. Maharam Shif on this Gemara says, so why does the Gemara need to tell us that point? The point is he went away to yeshiva, and then what happened afterwards, as we're going to have in the rest of the story. Why is it important to tell us that he wouldn't even wait for the end of Rav Shimon ben Yochai's Sheva Brachas? So there's an answer from Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, the famous Baal Musar, that says, you see from this the importance of when you have the opportunity to learn Torah, grab it right away. Don't wait for anything. Don't delay it for anything. Even something so important as, for example, that you're going to have your Reb Shimon ben Yochai is going to come with you and is going to be your chavrusa. No less. Nevertheless, don't wait for that. Just grab the opportunity and go right away.
Can't you say that watching Reb Shimon was in itself learning Torah in a much higher way?
I suppose, but on the other hand, there's learning Torah by watching, and then there's actually learning from Rebbeim. You're going to be watching them also. When Rav Chananya is going to be going to the yeshiva, he's going to be watching and observing the chachamim of the previous generation there as well. So I guess he figured that outweighs that. I was going to say that Rav Chaim tells in this connection a story with an earlier Rav Chaim, the Rav Chaim Volozhiner, the founder of the famous Volozhin Yeshiva. He tells a story that one time there was a bacher there who was known to be the best in the yeshiva. They one time asked him something in Torah, and the answer is actually in a Tosfos, but at that moment he had forgotten that Tosfos. He was in the middle of a meal. He was in the middle of eating, and someone asked him something, and he didn't remember it, even though it was an explicit Tosfos. He was so upset, he left in the middle of the meal and went to the yeshiva and stood and sat there and continued learning uninterruptedly for years. And eventually he became, in fact, one of the great rabbanim of that time. So when they told over the story, they said, you know, Chaim said, you know, on the one hand, it wasn't right for him to leave without benching. The halacha is you're supposed to bench first. On the other hand, if he had waited to bench first, he might have missed that opportunity and never become who he would really be. So here with Rav Chananya, it's the same kind of thing. As great as it might be to wait for Rav Shimon ben Yochai and be chavrusas with him, he knew that when you have the opportunity, you grab. Anyway, continues the Gemara with the story. Also, Yosef taught Trei Srei Shni Bevei Rab. So Rav Chananya went and stayed for 12 years in the yeshiva. And we talked about yesterday why after 12 years. Maharsha says from 18, which is when you get married, until 30, when a man reaches his full strength. And then he goes and gets a job. The Chidah, actually, I had mentioned this about yesterday, but I'd forgotten who it was from. It's from the Chidah, says that there are about 613 weeks in 12 years. So therefore, you have 1 week per mitzvah. 1 week to learn all the ins and outs of every mitzvah, and by the time you finish 12 years, you know all the mitzvahs and all the dinim of them inside. And then you start again. Yeah, of course. Anyway, so Abda Osi, by the time Rav Chananya came back, Ishtanu Shvili Demasa, the paths and the roads in the town had changed. New houses had been built, streets had been blocked off. So you couldn't tell your way around if you hadn't been there. So he didn't know how to get back to his own house. So Rav Chananya went and sat by the riverbank. Shomalau hi Ravisa. Then he heard women, girls were coming to draw water, like we have in Parshas Chayesara with Rivka. So he heard about a certain girl to have a korola. That the other girls were calling her Bas Chachinai, Mole Kulsech Beton Nezel. They're telling a Bas, daughter of Chachinai. Chachinai was his father's, but that would mean, in other words, like this is, they're calling her by her grandfather's name. Come, fill up your jug and let's go. Omar, so he says, oh, Shmami no hired a visididan. That must be my daughter. Remember, it's 12 years, he didn't recognize her. Ozel Basra, so he followed her, so now at least he knows the way to his house. Have a yesibu dvesu kanahala kimcha. His wife was sitting and sifting flour. And when he walked in, dal ena, she lifted up her eyes, chazisa, and she saw him, sovi liba. Her heart realized, she realized like instinctively, this is her husband, even though again, she hadn't seen him in 12 years and he must have changed in appearance a lot. Porach ruch, she was so surprised with happiness. Porach rucha, whose spirit flew away and she passed away. But Rav Chanina says, Rav Chanina, this poor woman, she waited for me for 12 years, Zeshara, that should be her reward. So he davened for her and she was revived. Well, the next one, Rav Chama Bad Bissa, the next.
We learned somewhere you're supposed to send a message.
So you're supposed to send a message, that's going to be the next one, actually. Rav Chama Bad Bissa, in the next story in the Gemara, did differently. But yes, there is in fact a Gemara, we had it recently in Ein Yaakov actually, that says that you shouldn't even walk suddenly into your own house and certainly not into somebody else's. So yes, Rav Chanina, now I guess Rav Chanina realized for the future that he should knock or he should whatever, yeah. So another case, another similar story, Rav Chama Bar Bissa Ozel Yosef Treis Reis Shniba Bei Medrasha. Rav Chama Bar Bissa also went and stayed in the yeshiva for 12 years learning Torah. Ki osa, when he came back, Omar, he thinks to himself, Loi Evid Kedavid Ben Chachinai. Let me not do like what Ben Chachinai did, where he walked suddenly into his house and startled his wife. So Ayo Yosef Medrasha, so when he came back to town, he went and sat in the local base medrash, Shalach Lebese, and he sent a messenger to his house to inform them that he's back. Now, his son, Rab Oshia, who had grown up in the meanwhile, came and sat in front of him, and he was asking him questions, and they were discussing in Torah. So Rab Chama saw that this Rab Oshia, he didn't realize it was his own son. Again, because 12 years, people change. So he saw that this young man who was sitting in front of him is very sharp. That he sees that he knows what he's talking about in Torah. Cholosh daite, so Rav Chama felt a little bit bad. Omar, he says, Ihavoi hocha, you know what, if I'd remained here these 12 years, havali zera kihai, I could have had a son of this caliber. So what a shud that I lost 12 years of teaching him. Well, Olavei say, eventually he came to his house. Old Bray and his son came in soon afterwards as well. Kom kame. So Rav Chama got up in front of this young man because he didn't know it's his own son. Who savala mishalei shmait sakabai? He figured, what's this guy doing in my house? He must be coming to ask me more things in Torah. Well, I see so far that he's a real Talmud Chacham, so let me stand up in his honor. He's younger than me. Okay, so I'll stand up in his honor anyway. Amr le dvesu, but his wife says, mi ka'abu b'koy mikame bruh. Since when does a father stand up in honor of his son? So then he chapsach that this is his son. So Rami Bachama said, you can apply to this story the expression in the pasuk Achut Hamashulash Leivim Heiri Yinosik. The triple cord, the triple braided rope will not be broken very quickly. Zerab Oshia Bnei Sharab Chama Bar Bisa. So here you have three generations of Talmud Chachamim in the family: Rab Oshia and his father Rab Chama and his father Rab Bisa, who were all Talmid Chachamim. So now this means that Torah is going to last in that family. In fact, Tosfa says it's not just that there were three generations in that family of Talmid Chachamim. You have that in other cases as well. But here you actually have all three of them were alive at the same time. When Rab Oshia became a Talmid Chacham, his grandfather, Rab Bissa, was still alive. In fact, Tosfa refers to a Gemara in Bava Basra where Rab Oshia and his father, Rab Chama, are discussing something in Halacha, and they went to ask Rab Bissa what the Halacha is. So we see Rab Bissa was still, the grandfather was still alive. In fact, another point Mefoshim make is, after all, if Rab Chama is away for 12 years in the yeshiva, who was teaching his son, Rab Oshia? His grandfather. So therefore, which there's this taka, it says in Kiddushin that you're supposed to do that. If a father is not available to teach his son, then the grandfather has the mitzvah too. So therefore, that's the chotam mishulash, that there really was a threefold rope over here, that threefold string that doesn't easily get broken. Another story with someone going away for a long time to learn in yeshiva, the famous story of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva raya de ben kalba savua haba. Rabbi Akiva was originally the shepherd of ben kalba savua. Ben kalba savua was a very rich yid in Yerushalayim in the years before the Churban. We have in the Agadah of the Churban in Perek HaNizokin, you have the whole thing where he and two of his fellow rich people offered to sell fields or something else. They during the siege of Yerushalayim, during the Roman siege of Yerushalayim, they were going to supply, one was going to supply wood and the other one was going to supply wheat and so on and so forth. And they all had enough to supply the entire city for 21 years until the Beryonim burned all the storehouses. Yeah, you have a different. Now you're referring to fields. So there is actually a story in... Okay, right. So there is actually a story in Masechta Shabbos where there's a poor man who hires himself out to a rich man for 3 years. And then Erev Yom Kippur, he's ready to go home and he asks for his wages. And the employer says, I don't have. Okay, so at least give me animals. I don't have. At least give me pillows. I don't have. Recholah, that wasn't actually Kalba Savua. The Gemara doesn't name there who it was. Mephoshim say, based I think on Midrashim, that the poor man was actually Rabbi Akiva back again when he was a shepherd and the rich man was Rabbi Eliezer. So the end of the story was that he was malamed schus, he was dumb makaf schus, that you didn't have money because right now it was tied up in business, you didn't have animals right now available because you would hire them out to other people, etc., etc. And then after Sukkos, the rich man Rabbi Eliezer brought him all of his wages and they talked it over again. So Rabbi Akiva raya de ben kalba savua. So Rabbi Akiva was the shepherd of ben kalba savua. Chazite brate, now his daughter, ben kalba savua's daughter, we know from other places that her name was Rachel, saw to have a tsnia umali. She saw that he was a tsniastic person and he had milus. Which means, now he was an Amma Oritz. And Tosfos points out that we have a Gemara, in Pesachim, where Rabbi Akiva himself says that back at that time, when he was an Amma Oritz, he used to say, I wish I could get a hold of a Talmud Chacham, I would bite him like a donkey, because he hated Chachamim so much. So how is the Gemara saying over here that he's Tzniya O'Mali? So Tosfos says, because what it was, not so much that he hated Talmud Chachamim, but he figured the Talmud Chachamim looked down on the Amma Oritz. First of all, you have, they learn Torah and the Amei Ha'aretz don't. So he figured the Talmud Chacham, he didn't realize that a genuine Talmud Chacham doesn't look down on an Amei Ha'aretz like that. He knows that the Torah is a gift from Hashem. Also, the fact is, we have in Halacha, there are Amei Ha'aretz, they have a Cheskas Tumah. And therefore, a person who's careful with Tumah V'Tara, as the Chachamim generally were, has to stay away and not even touch an Amma Aretz. So therefore, he felt like the Talmud Chacham are saying, like, we're better than you, Amma Aretz, and therefore he resented them for that, but not that he actually hated them. Marsha adds also that Tznia means that he had the quality of Tznius. We find in the Gemara in Brachas, for example, that he was Tzniastic even in the bathroom, where most people are not. And Mali means that he had good midas as far as Ben Adam Lachavera. Like that story just now, where he was done Makaf Schus, Rabbi Eliezer, even though you would think there's in a logical way, how does this rich guy not have any money or animals or pillows and blankets or fields or anything like that? And still he was done in Makaf Schus. So Rachel saw all these milus in Rabbi Akiva. The problem is he's in Amoritz. Well, Omrele, she says to him, if I am willing to be Makudish to you, Asla Slavei Rab, are you willing to go to the yeshiva to learn Torah? So he says yes. So she became Makudish to him in secret, Veshadaute, and she sent him off to learn in the yeshiva. Shama Avua, her father heard about it, and he was very upset. He told her she should be marrying an Amma Oretz. Obviously, he didn't see in her what he didn't see in Akiva what she saw in him.
Even though he was in yeshiva.
But nevertheless, he figured still, at least start with somebody who at least learned something. So he threw her out of his house, and he made a neder that she's also to have any hanah from his property. So now they're tremendously poor. We're going to learn in a few months, Bez Hashem, in the Dorim also, the Gemara has briefly the story of Rabbi Akiva and Rachel over there as well, with some details that are not in our Gemara over here. And we're going to learn about it over there, about how poor they were during that period. So he was in yeshiva. It seems that at least at the beginning, you have to remember, from going from an Amoritz, he's not obviously going to be learning, going and learning in a top yeshiva, like the yeshiva of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. He had to start out in Cheder. In fact, the Ovestud of Nosson says just that. He had a son already, which it seems from a previous marriage. Yesh Omrim, that son is Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho, although not everybody agrees to that. But anyway, so he
it's
went.
It's interesting
actually,
that.
One second, Avraham Moshe, let me just finish the sentence I was saying. So Ovestud of Nosson actually says that when he first went to learn, he went to Cheder together with his son, and they're sitting there in Cheder together and learning the Aleph Beis. What were you going to say?
It's interesting that she found him very tanua, and that she did something, which is to ask him to get married to her, which is not tanua. How do you explain that?
Why is it not
that?
Tanua? You know, it's true that usually
a woman doesn't ask a man.
Usually
a woman
not,
doesn't ask a man to get married
not.
To her.
It's not like there's anything not necessarily tzniistic about it. It's an unusual thing to do, but it's not necessarily a lack of tznius. Let's go on. The point is, so evidently there was a period of time when Rabbi Akiva is learning in town over there, and then that's during the time when you have the story in Nedarim about how Rachel was very poor and she had straw in her hair from the straw mattresses they were sleeping on and so forth. We'll learn that in a few months, Bez Hashem, when we get to that part of Nedarim. Anyway, eventually he went to learn in Yeshiva. Ozlo Yosef Treshin Beveirab. And he went and stayed for 12 years in the Beis Medrash, as we've been saying all this time, that 12 years was a standard amount for that. By the way, also, one of the Mephoshim, I think it's Ben Yehoyada, points out, she's saying, I'm willing to be Mekudesh to you. The implication is that the wedding will take place only after he gets back. But then, based on that Gemara and Nedarim, seems that they actually got married first, because it describes them sleeping in the same house and so forth. So the vort is, he says, originally she figured, I'll be Mekudesh to you. Fine, my father's not going to be happy with it, but once he sees that you're learning in Yeshiva, then he'll be reconciled to it, and then everything will be good. So in fact, then, he went off to learn, and then he started learning Torah, and still, when Kalba Savor found out about it, he was angry and threw her out of his house. So now she figured, you know what, at this point, there's nothing to lose. We might as well get married, and then he can go off to the Beis Medrash, because anyway, the whole point of doing only the Kiddushin was that to give my father a chance to be reconciled to it. If he's not going to be anyway, then we might as well go through with it. Anyway. Ki also, when Rabbi Akiva came back after 12 years learning, I see Bade Tresre Alfi Talmid. He brought with him 12,000 Talmid. Shamilahu, sorry, by now he's a distinguished Talmud Chacham. When he came close to his house, Shamilahu Sava, he heard an old man. Now, there are some, Tosfos mentions in some places that sometimes in the Gemara, how Hu Sava actually means other Yo. So it could mean that over here, or it could mean Stam, some old Nud. Anyway, the Ka'amalah, he was saying to Rachel, Ad kama kamadabris almanus chayim. How long are you going to live like this, like a living widow? Your husband is just alive, but you're in effect a widow because he's away for so long.
Yeah, wouldn't stir up trouble.
What?
Yeah, no, we wouldn't.
No, if I care, because maybe it was a test to see what she's going to say. Because Omrale, because she answers back, you know what? If he were to listen to me, if I had my way, Yosef Tresri Shniach Rini, then let him, he would stay for another 12 years in the Beis Medrash, and I'll become a greater Talmud Chacham. Omar, so Rabbi Akiva thinks to himself, good, Birshus Ka Abidna. In that case, then I have her tacit permission to go back to the Beis Medrash. Hodr Ozel Yosef Tresri Shniach Rini Reirab. So he went and spent another 12 years in the Beis Medrash. So altogether, he was away for 24 years. They say, by the way, a vort, I think it's also from Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, that says, I mean, why didn't he at least go into the house, say hello to her, and then turn around and go back? And he says, because Torah is like compound interest. The more you stick to it, the greater levels you can reach with, if it's without interruption. If he interrupted in the middle over there to come in and say hello and whatever, then that would be, there's 12 years, and then there's a separate 12 years. And the second 12 years wouldn't have the same impact as it would when the first one of them is actually the 13th year of uninterrupted learning and so forth. So therefore, that's what he felt. So he figured that's what he has to do. He also, when he came back, he came back with 24,000 Talmidim. These are the famous 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, where we know what happened to them later on. Anyway, Shama Devesu, his wife heard that he's coming. Havas Kanufgalape. So she came out to greet him. Omru lo shibavta, the neighbors, her women neighbors said to her, Sh'ili money, at least you're dressed in rags or something, borrow some nice clothes, lavushvi, kasoi, dress and cover yourself properly. What are you wearing? What are you going to wear? These rags to go see the great Talmid Chacham. So she answers them with a phrase from a pasuk, Yedea tzaddik nefesh behemtoi. The tzaddik knows the desires and the wants of his animal, meaning that tzaddik is sensitive to everybody's needs. Mm-hmm. So the tzaddik, Rabbi Akiva, realizes how much I went through for his sake, that he should be able to learn Torah. He's not going to look down on me because I'm dressed in not such nice clothing. Rashi over there, or actually, he's not really Rashi. It's they call him the Mefarish, whatever. In the Dorim, says a different explanation. She may not have even known that the Talmid Chacham coming to town is her husband. There was an announcement: the big Talmid Chacham is coming to town. But she's saying, nevertheless, whoever he is, I don't know who he is, but he's not going to look down on a poor woman like me just because I'm not dressed. Just because I'm not dressed in such nice clothing. So Kimatya Lagabe, when she came close to him and she realized that it is in fact her husband, Rabbi Akiva, Naflal Apa, she fell on her face in front of him, Komenashkele Lakare, and she was kissing his feet in happiness and gratitude and everything. By the way, I mean, how would she be able to be touching and kissing his feet? Ben Yehoyada points out, you have to say that obviously she was being careful to follow to become Tahor when at the appropriate times. Now at Bashkoch brought this, it was the time when she's Tahor, even though she might have thought to herself, he's away for all these years, what do I need to go to mikveh for? But nevertheless, she still kept it up. Rabbi Akiva's servants are pushing her away. They didn't realize who she is. Some lady is coming and falling on her feet in front of him. What does she need to be here? But Rabbi Akiva tells them, Shavkua, leave her alone. Shaliva shalachem shalahu. All everything that's mine, all of my Torah, and everything that's your Torah that you learned from me is all thanks to her. Well, the story continues. Shama Avua also Gabri Rabbala Masa, her father, Ben Kalbasavua, heard that a great Talmud Chacham had come to town. Again, he didn't realize that it was his own son-in-law. Omar, so he thinks to himself, Ezel Lagabe, you know what, all these years he felt bad that many years ago he made this neder banning his daughter from having any hanaf from his nafasim. He's getting old, he wants to do something about it. So he thinks to himself, Ezel Lagabe, let me go to this Talmud Chacham. Efshar de Mefer Nidroi, maybe he'll be able to be matur neder for me. You need either a yochid mumcha, one yochid who is an expert in Hilchos Nedarim, or Shloisha Hedyotis. Nowadays, we don't have yochid mumcha, so we always use Shloisha Hedyotis, but in principle, api halacha, you can have a yochid mumcha, so he might be able to be matur neder. Also, Gabes of Ben Kalba Savor came to him. Omale, so Rabbi Akiva says to him, Adaita de Gavra Rabba Minodarta, did you make the neder having in mind that this man, this Akiva, that your daughter is marrying, could become a great person, a great Talmid Chacham? Omale, and Ben Kalba Savor says, no, afilo perak echad, afilo halacha achas, even if he only knew one perak of Mishnayas, even if he only knew one halacha, then I never would have made that neder in the first place. Well, that's a Pesach to cancel the neder. Omale, anohu. So Rabbi Akiva tells him, that's me. Nafal al ape, so Ben Kalba Savor was so overjoyed, he fell on his face, the Nashke al kare, and kissed him on his feet, like the way his daughter did. And he gave him half of his wealth. The Gemara tells us in Nedarim that there were six sources from which Rabbi Akiva became wealthy. This is the first one of them, that he got half of Kalba, he and his wife got half of Kalba Savor's money. And then the Gemara tells over there are five other incidents in Rabbi Akiva's lifetime where each of them he got a lot of money from. Tosfos points out that there seems to be a problem with this al pi halacha. There's a concept in halacha that says, now we're going to learn in Masechta Nedarim, the next Masechta, when we talk about the dinim of Ataras Nedarim, there's something called noivad, where you have something, it was actually in yesterday's Rambam Shlosh Prakim, if you have something that's completely out of left field, something that would have been completely unexpected, then you can't use that as a basis for being matur neder. So a Mishnah gives an example over there. Let's say, for example, a person makes a neder that Pliny is not allowed to have, that I'm not allowed to have hanaf from Pliny. And now suppose that Pliny becomes the city sofer. So now anybody who needs a document written is going to go to him. is this person allowed to go to him? And or that no, is he allowed to be matir neder on that basis? Also not, because that's noila, that's something completely unexpected. In fact, the Rambam phrases it that after all, the person would say, you know what, if I had my way, he wouldn't have become the sofer of the city and I'd still be able to keep my neder. So therefore, that's not a valid reason to be matir neder. So how does that work over here? Isn't it noila that the Ama Oretz shepherd Akiva should become the tremendous Talmud Chacham Rabbi Akiva? The answer is that no, Tosfos says, the fact is he did go to the yeshiva. It's normal a person goes to a yeshiva and learns Torah. Eventually they stick to it, then they become an Odom Gonel. Or Tosfos says, another possibility is he specifically, when he made the neder, it was clear that he's making the neder because Akiva is an Ama Oretz, and therefore, as soon as he's an Ama Oretz, then that automatically falls away. You have a halacha in that connection. It was also in yesterday's Rambam. But let's say, for example, a person says, I'm making a neder. I'm not going to marry this woman because her father is a terrible person. And then they tell him, you should know, her father's dead. Well, then automatically the neder falls away. Or they tell him the father did tshuva. Same thing. So therefore, it would be the same kind of thing over here. The Rivash, though, does point out, the fact is, for Rabbi Akiva himself to be matur the neder, he's a negeya bedavar. After all, there's an interest that he's got an interest in it. So the Rivash says it doesn't mean that Rabbi Akiva himself was matur neder. Once he discussed with Ben Kalba Savua and they found a Pesach, then Rabbi Akiva got together a beis din of other people who were matur neder for him. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Brate did Rabbi Akiva avdalil ben Azai hoch. The daughter of Rabbi Akiva did the same thing to Ben Azai, the same thing as her mother did, taking Rabbi Akiva and telling him, you go off to the yeshiva, the same way Rabbi Akiva's daughter did the same thing with Ben Azai, that she sent him off to the yeshiva to learn Torah.
Oh, because they had a child and she was a daughter?
So they had eventually they had a daughter, yeah. And this daughter, when she grew up, she did exactly the same kind of thing. And the Gemara says, "Behainu da'amri inshi," this is like the expression that people say, "Rechela bosa, rechela azla," one sheep follows another. They meant that as a play on words as well, because Rabbi Akiva's wife's name is Rachel. The same kind of thing as the mother does, the same kind of thing the daughter does. So they act in the same way. Tosfos points out, by the way, there's a different Gemara in Sota that says we're not even sure whether Ben Azai ever got married. And the Gemara discusses over there that maybe Ben Azai remained single because he said, Chosh kanafshi b'Torah, I'm so in love with Torah that I can't get married. So the Gemara brings there two versions. So according to the version, he got married and then divorced, then that's what happened over here. According to the other version, Tosfos says he went through Erusin. He did Erusin with Rabbi Akiva's daughter, but he never followed it up with Nisuin because, again, he said, Choshka nafti b'Torah. I can't live a married life. I'm too in love with Torah. So according to that, he never actually got married, just Erusin. No, because then he'd give her a get, I guess. Another story with one of the Chachamim who sent away his son to learn Torah in Yeshiva, Rav Yosef Brei de Rava, Shadre Avur LeBei Rav LeKamei de Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, the son of Rava, his father sent him, after he got married, to the yeshiva in front of Rav Yosef. So you have those two Rav Yosefs over here. There's Rav Yosef, the regular Rav Yosef throughout Shas, who usually is paired up with Rava. He was one of Rava's own Rebbeim. So now Rava is sending his son to learn by his own former Rebbe, where his son has the same name as that Rebbe, Rav Yosef. So he sent him Poskule Shitshni. They arranged that he's going to stay there in the yeshiva for 6 years. Ki have a Tlashni, when 3 years had passed, Motamala Yom Kippuri, it came out of Yom Kippur, Omar, so Rav Yosef, the son, thought to himself, let me go and see the members of my household. In other words, let me go say hello to my wife. Shama Avuhi, but his father, Rava, heard that he's coming, and he was upset about it. Shokal Mona, he took a weapon, the Nafak Lape, and he went out to confront him. Not that he's literally going to attack him, but in other words, he's taking a weapon, like as if to show how upset he is, as if you're running away from yeshiva or something. Based on what we were saying before about Rabbi Akiva, it's possible to understand. He's saying, if you stay there for 6 years consecutively, then each year will build on the previous one, and you'll have the chance to become a tremendous Talmud Chacham. As opposed to if you break it up 3 years and then a break and another 3 years, it's not really going to have the same effect. That said, though, actually, Maor Shor says the vote is that he's saying, look, of all times you had to come back. So actually, no. So Maor Shor says that actually Rabbi Yosef figured to the son, figured to come back Erev Yom Kippur on the theory. This way, his father shouldn't suspect that the only reason he's coming back is to have relations with his wife. Yom Kippur night, you can't anyway. So this way, his father should realize that he's coming because Taka, he wants to see his wife and say hello to her. With that said, Ben Yehoyada says that actually, if I care, that is why Rava was so upset. Because he's saying, look, you're Davka coming back on the one night when you can't have relations. So what's that going to be? It can lead you to be Motzi Zera Levatala from your taiva for your wife. It can lead her to be very disappointed that the one night she finally sees you after 3 years, you can't even. So therefore, that's even more reason for him to be upset with him. So Omale, he says to him, Zoynoscha Nizkauta, did you remember your Zoyna? Now, that's a very strong term to use on her. And in fact, a number of Mephoshim say the correct Gersa is not Zoynoscha, but Zugoscha. Which means your pair, you're the other half of your pair, your wife. Ikadamri, another version is Amala Yonoschani's character. Another version is he said to him, you remembered your dove all of a sudden? Which Marsha points out there's a big connection between Yonoscha and Zugoscha, because a dove is always faithful to its mate. That's a dove is a symbol of being faithful, because when a pair of doves made up, a male and a female made up, and they remain together for life. In fact, for that reason, a dove is used as a symbol for the Jewish people, because we're always faithful to Hashem. Anyway, so they got into arguing about that. Itrud, they were distracted. They got into an argument about that. The result is loy mar ifsik. Neither one of them ended up eating the sodam of sekas. Okay. The Mishnah says hamaredis al bayla. Suppose that a woman goes on strike against her husband. Meredis literally means that she rebels. We're going to see in the Gemara, what is she rebelling from? What is she refusing to do? What we do is we deduct from her ksuba 7 dinarim for every week. So every day she's losing 1 dinar out of her ksuba. So if, let's say, for example, she was married as a basula and her ksuba is 200, the basic 200 zuz. So every week we're deducting 7 from it. Mephoshim point out, by the way, that if eventually they do reconcile, if eventually she's willing to go back and do whatever it is that she was going on strike from, then he's going to have to write, if it goes below 200, he's going to have to write her a new ksuba, because you're not allowed to stay together without a ksuba of at least 200 or 100, as we learned before, and that we learned earlier in the Masechta.
The papers, the actual value.
We're talking about the actual value, yeah. Rabbi Yehuda Meshiva Tarpi'ikin. Rabbi Yehuda says it's not 7 dinar, but 7 tarpi'ikin. We'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow on Samach Dalet Amud Aleph how much a tarpi'ik is. And the Mishnah continues, Ad Mosai Hu Poichis, how far down can you go with that? Ad Keneged Ksubasa, up to the amount of Huksuba. Then at that point, if she's still not willing to do what she's supposed to, then at that point, then he can just give her a get and she's forfeited Huksuba entirely. Yeah. The point being, Rashi says, according to the Tanakhama, according to the Tanakhama, we're not saying that eventually she may get property, for example, that she inherits from her father, let's say, and that we should deduct from that as well. No, once the ksuba is gone, okay, Mephoshim say it means not just the ksuba, it means the tosfos ksuba as well, but once that's been deducted, then that's it. If he wants to divorce her at that point, let him do that.
As we're going along, taking off, there isn't enough for ksuba anymore, then I will be in the same house.
Well, that's the point. In other words, so as long as she's rebellious and not willing to, if eventually they make up, then fine, we write a new ksuba. But right, if not,
then
until then, the point, right? But the point is, she's anyway not listening to him. Rabbi Yossi emel olam v'poiches v'holich. Rabbi Yossi says no, you can keep on deducting not only from the ksuba, but ad sheim tipol lo yerushim imakam acha goyva hemena. Even to the point where if she receives the Yerusha from another source, that he can continue collecting from that. Next, continues the Mishnah. V'chein ha-mored al-ishto, the same way if he rebels against his wife and he refuses to do whatever it is for her, as we'll see again in the Gemara what that is, mo'sifin al-ksubasa shloisha dinarim b'shabbos. Then we add 3 dinarim to her ksuba for every week. The Gemara is going to discuss on some of Dalet Amud Beis why it is that the amount that she gets, the increase, is less than what she loses when she's murdered. Tosfos actually points out an interesting point. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that the 7 dinarim that she loses per week correspond to the seven household jobs that we learned in the Mishnah and in Tesamid Beis that a woman is supposed to do around the house. We said she's supposed to be helping grind the grain and baking and cooking and nursing the baby and so forth. And the three dinarim that he has to add to her correspond to the three things, She'eruk, Susa, V'ainosa, that he has to provide food, clothing, and tashmish. Tosfos says, though, apparently, though, the Gemara Bavli that we're learning disagrees with that, because eventually on Samach Dalet Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to give a different reason for these numbers. If it accepted the Yerushalmi's reason, then it would have said so. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shloisha Taupi'ikin, Rabbi Yehuda says the amount is not three dinarim, but three Taupi'ikin, same as in the beginning of the Mishnah where he had said seven Taupi'ikin instead of seven dinarim. The Gemara is going to end up explaining that a Taupi'ik is a half a dinar. So therefore, he's saying that the amounts are half of what the Tanakhama say. Okay, so the Gemara says, Meredes Mimai, when we say she's rebelling, she's going on strike, as far as what? Rav Huna Omer Mitash Mishamita. Rav Huna says it's that she's saying, I refuse to have relations. Now, we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, we'll get to it either today or tomorrow. What about now? There can be a case where she's saying, I refuse to have tashmish because I find the guy repulsive and I can't stand being married to him. I don't care if I get my ksuba, I want out. We're going to talk about that on Amud Beis. The Rambam holds that that's a valid reason for her to demand a get and the husband has to give it. However, pretty much all the other Rishonim and Poskim disagree with the Rambam on that and say that's not a valid reason. She would be considered a Meredes for that. According to the Rambam, Meredes would be, she's saying, it's not that I find the guy repulsive. I'm just on strike. It's not that I have any objection to having tashmish with him but right now I'm mad at him and therefore I want to go on strike and I want to do that in order to make him uncomfortable. So that's Rav Huna. Rav Yosi Rav Chanina says it means that she's refusing to do the household jobs that we said that we learned previously in the Mishnah that she's supposed to do. Now, actually, within that, there is some discussion about that. Tosfos learns that specifically Rav Yosi Rav Chanina, when he says malacha, he means specifically producing wool, spinning wool that we talked about the other day and that we're going to talk about in more detail in the Mishnah on Samach Dalet Amud Beis. So that's what he'd be saying. In other words, Tosfos says they're having the same machloikas we learned a few days ago that Rav Huna says that a woman can always say, Eini nizonis ve'eini oisa, I don't need your mizonis, I'm not going to give you my maisi yodai, or I'm not going to produce maisi yodai at all, I'll support myself from my own means. And Rav Yosi Rav Chanina then would be holding that that's not so. Other Rishonim learn that we are talking about when we say malacha, we mean the household jobs. And that would also be considered meredes. Interesting in that regard, the Rambam writes that if a woman refuses to do those household jobs, the ones that we mentioned, the Rambam uses the expression, we force her to do it even with a whip. And the Rambam, and the Raivan says on that, no such thing, using a whip on a woman, whoever heard of such a thing. So he says that if anything, koifin would have to mean in other ways, convincing her or whatever. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tanan. Now let's look at our Mishnah and see which one it fits with better. The Mishnah continues that you have the case where the man rebels and goes on strike against his wife. So presumably it's the same kind of thing. Whatever it is that she's doing, there has to be a parallel to what he's doing. So according to Rav Huna, that it's talking about tashmish, okay. So meredes is that she refuses to have tashmish, and mered would be that he refuses to. And each of them is meshubad to the other for it. So therefore, then we can say that each one has their consequences. But if you say that she's going on strike from malacha, me meshubad la, what kind of malacha is he meshubad to do for her? And on the face of it, the household jobs that we said are all her responsibility. And the answer is ain. As a matter of fact, yes. But ain't zon ve ain't mafarnis. You can have a case where the husband says, I'm not going to support you and I'm not going to provide for you. So he's going on strike and refuses to work in order to earn money to support his wife. Tosfos points out, by the way, Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Eliyahu that you see from that, it's not enough that, so it's one thing, for example, back in those days when most people were farmers. So of course, you can expect the guy to farm in order to produce food for the house. What about if we're talking about some other kind of job? Is a man required to take some other kind of job to support his wife? based on our Gemara, Rabbeinu Eliyahu says that yes, apparently, then apparently, whatever kind of job he needs to be willing to take, whatever kind of job is available to support his wife. On the other hand, Tosfos says maybe not necessarily. Maybe that's not a strong proof. Maybe it means if he has a field or he has some place where he can work to actually produce food, then he has to do that. But if his job is not going to be producing food, just producing money with which to buy food, maybe he doesn't have such a chiyuv of that. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Didn't Rab say that if a husband says, I'm not willing to support my wife, then he should divorce her right away, he should divorce her and give her huksuba? And presumably that means right away, whereas in our Mishnah we're saying that we keep on increasing the value of huksuba, and eventually when he gives in, then she has a larger huksuba than she would have before. So the Gemara says, okay, still, don't we at least have to check with him first? We have to see. After all, he might change his mind. So during that time, while we're still trying to convince him and talk him into doing the right thing, then meanwhile, we keep on augmenting Huxoba. Yes, eventually, as Rav is saying, it might end up that we require him to divorce her if he keeps on sticking to this for too long. There's a different girsa over here, not bay, but ba, that we, l'imlochi ba, which means that we would have to check with her, what does she want at this point? Does she just want that he should divorce her and give her a ksuba and she'll just be out? Or is she willing to wait and see if maybe they can get him to do the right thing? Anyway, the point is that just because Rav is saying yotzi v'yetin ksuba doesn't necessarily mean right away. So our Mishnah would be talking about what happens in the middle while that process is going on, and Rav is talking about what the end of the process is if he doesn't end up shaping up. Okay, so the Gemara says meisvi. Now, let's continue with this again. We have the Machlokas, Rav Huna, and Rav Yosi, Rav Chanina. When going back to Meredes, what is she being murdered from? So now we have a question on Rav Huna, who says that's from Tashmish. Mesi, so we have a contradiction from a Braisa. The Braisa says, Achas li arusa or nesua, doesn't matter whether the woman is an arusa or a nesua. In the case of an arusa, the murid would be, the muridus would be that she's saying, I refuse to get married. So we already did the erusin, we had the 12 months, but I don't want to get married now. Unesua, or whether she's already married. Ba'afilu nida, even if at that point she's a nida, ba'afilu choyla, even if she's not feeling well, ba'afilu shemeres yavam, even a shemeres yavam can also be a meredes, namely if she says to the yavam, I refuse to do yibum or chalitza. We'll talk about that more in the Gemara tomorrow, Bas Hashem. So, bishleim alamanda omam imalocha. So I understand, according to Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina, that she's being murdered, she refuses through malacha, shapir, then that explains how that could apply to all these women, including the nida. Elamanda omami tashmish, but if you say that she's refusing to have tashmish, nida bas tashmishi, so what? When she's a nida, they can't have tashmish anyhow. So why are we even mentioning it? And the answer is omaloch. Rav Huna could answer you, fine, but like the expression we learned previously in the Gemara, ein adoma misha yeshle pas basaloi l'misha ein lo. You can't compare a person who has bread in his basket to someone who doesn't. In other words, in a normal case, yes, she's nida, but he knows that in a few days she'll be able to go to the mikveh and will be back to normal. Here, she's being murdered while she's a nida. He doesn't know. Are we going to be able to reconcile before it's time for her to go to the mikveh? Is this going to be an open-ended thing? So therefore, you can still say that it still troubles him. Tosfos, by the way, points out in this connection that, again, Tosfos, who held before that even according to Rabbi Yosef of Chanina, malacha doesn't mean that she refuses to do the household job. It just means that she refuses to produce wool, which will help support the family. So Tosfos says, because the fact is that the kind of jobs that we were talking about before, for example, help, for example, putting the grain into the ground and cooking and whatever, even if she's sick, then she could still do those. So, on the other hand, other Rishonim point out on the contrary, the Gemara could have pointed out that even, for example, when she's sick or when she's a nida, even a nida may not do those things, especially if they want the food in the house to remain tahor. So that all goes into that machlokas Rishonim of what it means, according to Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, that she refuses to do malach.
Spinning,
which is a nida, is not a problem. No, I mean, she may use some of her saliva on the string. Okay, so they may have to tovel the thread afterwards. Big deal. Okay, that's for food. You can't tovel once it's tummy. Okay, Ikadamri, another version. Now, this whole part, by the way, these two lines were in parenthesis. Rashi, in fact, does not go to them. We do have them later on in the Gemara on other days in a different context as well. And we've shown him discuss why it is that Rashi wouldn't be go to sit over here. Anyway, Ikadamri, another version, on the contrary, we can say we can understand, according to Reb Huna, that says that she's just saying, I don't want to do Tashmish. Well, that explains why we're saying, even if she's sick, the fact is, even if she's sick, they can still have Tashmish. I can understand Malacha, but no, just the opposite. But if you're saying that she's rebelling and refusing to do Malacha, if she's sick, is she capable of doing malacha? So why, according to that opinion, would she be considered a meredes if she's sick anyway? Again, as Tosfos had said, we're not talking about heavy jobs. We're talking about light household chores, which she could do even if she's sick. So tashmish, we can understand, but yeah. So Elana. So no, rather we have to say like this. If she refuses to have Tashmish, then everybody agrees. Both Rav Huna and Rav Yosef Rav Chanina are going to agree that that's considered meredes. The machloikas is, what happens if she refuses to do malacha? Again, according to Tosfos, that means specifically spinning wool or whatever job it is that she does to help earn income for the household. And according to other Rishonim, it means the other kinds of household jobs as well. So Maris Savam and Malacha, but I have a Meredes. Rav Huna holds that refusing to do Malacha is not considered Meredes. That has other rules. The Rambam would say that we force her with actual whips, if necessary. The Ravid would say that not, but it doesn't have the din of Meredes in our Mishnah that we start deducting from Huxilla. Whereas Rav Yosi, Rav Chanina is going to hold that even refusing to do Malacha is also considered Meredes. Okay. Gufa. Now let's get back to That's the machlokes. Most of the Rishonim Paskin like Rav Huna. So therefore, only if she's murdered from Tashmish is she considered meredes. If she's murdered from Malacha, according to the various definitions, then we have other things. And of course, when it comes to producing wool, anyway, she always has the option of saying Eini Nizonus Veini Osa, because the Halacha is also like Rav Huna, that she can do that, and therefore that's not going to be an issue anyway. One thing before Shem point out, you can still have, let's say, for example, imagine that we do it on a day-by-day thing. Every day he's giving her mazonus, and every day she's producing wool. So suppose one day she received her mazonus, and that day she says, I don't want to produce wool. So then we could have that could still be considered a murdered from Malacha. Okay, the Gemara says Gufa. Now let's get back to this whole the whole thing. What exactly happens over here? Hamaredes al-Baila, so when a woman is on strike against her husband, so every week we said in the Mishnah, we deduct 7 dinarim from Huxuba payment. Rabbi Yehuda and Meshiva Tarpi'ikin, and Rabbi Yehuda says not 7 dinarim, but 7 Tarpi'ikin, which again, the Gemara is going to tell us later, means half the amount that the Tanakhama says. And the Braisa continues, Rabbi Seinu Chozru Hanimnu, later on our rabbis got together, rethought about it, and voted that like this. The problem with that is it's a very gradual thing. Even let's say, for example, you think of she has a regular ksuba of 200 at the rate of 7 dinarim a week. It's going to take over half a year before the situation is resolved. Either before her ksuba is used up, and then he just divorces her and sends her away without a ksuba, or she gets reconciled. That's a long time to wait with the situation. So therefore, so they voted that we should do differently. We announce about her for 4 Shabbosis, one after the other, in the shuls, as the Gemara is going to say soon. So every week in shul, they make an announcement that Plonis is being murdered against her husband. That way people, friends of hers, relatives of hers, whatever, can talk her out of it. It'll embarrass him as well. But the point is, yeah, the shochet. But still, the point is that maybe it'll have an effect on her. And after all, there is also the consideration. Maybe there is something that he's not doing, not quite so right either. That got his wife in this kind of mood. So maybe that'll give him the incentive also. Yeah. Anyway. The Shochem of Beistin sends her a messenger, Hevi Yadas, you should know, Shafilu Ksubasich Meya Mana, that even if your Ksuba is 100 Mana, which is a regular Ksuba is 2 Mana, a regular Ksuba is 200 Zuz, which is 2 Mana. A Mana is 100 Zuz. So 100 Mana is a very, very large Ksuba. Kifsat, you've lost it. So then, and the Braisa continues. This is the part of the Braisa we quoted before. So in other words, instead of doing this gradual thing of 7 dinarim per week, we tell her you have these 4 weeks to shape up. And then after that, then your whole ksuba is gone. By the way, Rishonim point now, obviously, if he changes his mind and goes back to doing what she's supposed to do in the 4 weeks, then good. Rishonim point out, what happens if she does this again? Then we're not necessarily going to give her four weeks. Because after all, otherwise she might do this every time. She'll go on strike, 3 weeks will pass, then she'll say, you know what, I changed my mind, and this could be, so therefore, in future times, we're not necessarily going to give her 4 weeks. Anyway, the Braisa continues. This is the part that we had before. Achas li'arusa u'nesua. All of this applies whether she's an arusa or whether she's already married. Afilu nida, even if she's a nida and she can't have tashmish, she can still do the other household jobs. Afilu choyva, even if she's sick. That's we said before, that when she's sick, she might not be able to do, she may still be able to do tashmish, and therefore we can still say she's considered a meredis from that, even if she's not able to do the household jobs. Anyway, afilu shemeres yavam, even a shemeres yavam who's refusing to do yibum or chalitza is also considered a meredis. So again, the Gemara says, like we had on Amud Aleph, Amalei Rav Chiya bar Yosef l'Shmuel Nida bas Tashmish. Why are we even mentioning a Nida? She can't. They can't have Tashmish anyway. And the answer is like before, Amalei Ein Adum Mishi Yesh LePas V'Saloi LeMisha Ein LePas V'Saloi. It's not comparable when he has bread in his basket or he doesn't. In other words, when he knows that soon her Nidus will be over, and that's that. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar Rami Bachama. We announce about her only in the shuls and the bate medrash. Meaning, in other words, when we say we make these announcements, we don't mean we make them in the street. We make them in the shuls and in the bate medrash. Omar Rabba, Dekanami, and Rabba said, you see that actually from the wording of the Braisa, Dekatani Arba Shabbosis Zuachazu. It says four Shabbosis, one after the other. On Shabbos, people are not working, so they're not in the streets. Where are they? In the shuls, in the Bate Medrash. So that must be the place where you have to make the announcements. Shmami know that proves it. Tosfos points out, now, you can't say, sometimes the word Shabbos means a week. When we say in Shir Shal Yoyim, Hayoyim Yem Rishon B'Shabbos, Hayoyim Yem Sheni B'Shabbos, and so forth, Shabbos over there means a week. So maybe it would mean that we make the announcement every day for 4 weeks consecutively. Tosfos says no, because Tesefta clearly says, the collection of Braisos from Rav and Rav Oshia, clearly says that they announce only once per week. So in that case, it means that they make the announcement every week on Shabbos and the Yom. Okay. Omer Rami Bachoma, when we said before that Beis Din sends her a warning that you should know if you keep this up, you're forfeiting your whole ksuba, they send her this message twice. Achas kodem achroza, v'achas la'achar achroza. Once before the announcement and once after it. Now there are two ways of understanding that. One is that it means before they start the series of announcements. In other words, so they're going to be starting, let's say, this coming Shabbos. They're going to be starting, let's say, Shabbos Parshas Kisetze. So then they would send her the first message on Erev Shabbos or sometime before Shabbos of Parshas Kisetze. Then you'd have 4 weeks, Kisetze, Kisava, Nitzavim, Vayelach. Then after the fourth announcement on Parshas Vayelach, then they're going to be sending her another message. That's one way of understanding it. The other way of understanding it is that it means before and after every one of the announcements. So on Erev Shabbos, Parshas Kisetze, and on Sunday of the next week. On Erev Shabbos of Parshas Kisava, and on Sunday of the following week, and so forth. That's how Shitim Kovetzis brings that Tamidur Rabbeinu Yonah, understand it that way. Tosfos also seems to understand it that way, as opposed to Rashi seems to understand it more the first way, that it means that one time before all of them and one time after all of them. So the Gemara says, Dorash Rav Nachman Baruch Chista Halacha K'Rabbi Sein. Rav Nachman Baruch Chista Darshin in public, saying the Halacha is like Rabbi Sein. Now, Rashi understands that to mean that, so again, we had on Mishnah saying that we do it a gradual thing. We deduct 7 dinarim from Huxuba every week. Rabbi Seinu are saying we have the 4 weeks of announcements and then that's that. So now, Rav Nachman Baruch Chista is saying that the halacha is like them, that we do it that way rather than like on Mishnah. In which case, Omer Rava, hai burcha, in which Rava says this is nonsense. In other words, it shouldn't be that way. The halacha should be, Rashi actually says, Dover Sheinu Hogun, something that's not erlach, something that can't possibly be right. Now, Tosfos actually learns differently. Tosfos says it's like this. Rabbi Seinu are saying, again, that we have to make the 4 weeks of announcements. Rami Bar Choma was saying, it's not just enough to make the 4 weeks of announcements, we also have to send her, not just, Rabbi Seinu was saying that after the 4 weeks of announcements, we send her a message saying, if you keep this up, then you're forfeiting your whole summer. Rami Bachoma is adding this point about sending her a message before the Achraza. And now when Rav Nachman Bar Chista is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Seinu, meaning you don't have to warn her ahead of time, you just have to warn her at the end. And so now Rava is arguing on that and saying, hi, Burcha, that's nonsense. Why should we not say, like Rami Bachoma, that we have to warn her ahead of time as well?
Right.
So in other words, according to Tosfos' understanding, it's not that Rava is saying the halacha should be like our Mishnah, that instead you do the seven dinarim at a time, but he's arguing, why should it be explicitly like Rabbi Seinu, that all we have is the 4 weeks of announcements in the shuls, and then the warning to her, there should be, like Rami Bachoma says, the warning beforehand, and then the warning after. Or like Tamir Rabbeinu Yonah say, that there should be a warning before and after every one of the four announcements. Anyway, Omele Rav Nachman Yitzchok, my bruch say. So Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, why do you think that's not hogun? Why do you think that that's not a proper statement? Anoam Rito Niale, you should know, I told Rav Nachman Baruch Chista this din, Umishmei de Gavri Rabba Am Rito Niale. I told it to him in the name of a great Talmud Chacham. Umanu Rav Yosi Rav Chanina. I told it to him in the name of Rav Yosi Rav Chanina. So what do you want? There's nothing wrong with it. Okay, so they want to ask the Ihu Kaman Sagar. Well, Rava who disagrees with that, who said burcha, so who is he holding right? And the answer is Kiha de Itmar, Rava Amar Rav Sheshes, Halochanim Lochin Ba. We have a different statement that Rava says in the name of Rav Sheshes that we consult with her. In other words, we don't say let's give her a get right away. We work on trying to get her to agree to do the right thing and reconcile with her husband. Meanwhile, we do, as we said in the Mishnah, the seven dinarim per Shabbos. Now, here's where Tosfos has the problem. What do you mean? Inu command Svorua. Rava is saying like the Mishnah. Why do we need a source for Rava beyond our Mishnah? That is why Tosfos says that the question is not who Rava holds. Like the question is Rabbi Seinu, who was saying that we don't need to warn her ahead of time. So who are they holding like? Who are they holding like, saying that you don't need a warning ahead of time? And the answer is they're holding like this other statement of Rava, saying that we don't have to warn her, but we do have to try and convince her. And meanwhile, and then we start the 4 weeks of announcements. On the other hand, the Gemara continues, Rav Huna by Yehuda, Amar Rav Sheshes, halacha ein nimlochin ba. The halacha is that we don't consult with her. We don't have to. We have the warnings, and that's that. The bottom line halacha is that in fact nimlochin ba, but actually Rishonim bring over here. Now we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with more discussion about what's going on over here. What's the situation with this meredes? But we actually have the Tosfos brings and many Rishonim bring a takana that the Gaonim made, or actually not even the Gaonim, but even the later Rabbon and Savaroi made a takana. That we don't do this whole thing, not even with the 4 weeks. If the husband wants to divorce her right away, then he has the option to do that. If she's meredes. So the Rambam doesn't really like that. The Rambam doesn't really like that takana. But most of the other Rishonim accept it. The reason why they made that takana, it's brought in Shubas of the Gaonim, is because there was a problem where Jewish women were rebelling against their husbands, figuring like, you know, they'll find themselves goyish boyfriends or something. So therefore, the Chachamim figured the longer we keep this thing going, the more of a problem you have with that. Therefore, if she know, therefore let's make it that the husband can divorce her sooner than that without having to go through all of that. So we'll continue discussing in the Gemara tomorrow what the Gemara says the rules are. But again, many of the Rishonim say that there was this takana of the later Rabban and Sivaroi, or the Uri Goinim, which then has an effect on that. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Shkayach, everyone.